For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Here's a unique one today. I used to play this when I worked at Toads as a disc jockey in Columbia way back in 1985 or whenever the hell it was. A little Gap Band Sue.
I just listened to Magic 108.
I know, right? Oh, that was such a great station back in the day.
It really was.
80s. It was fantastic.
I did traffic on there as Chris Jordan for a couple years.
You know, I was just a teenager working at the booming 10-watt radio station out there next to Parkway West, KYMC. But we were always trying to get to know all the folks from whether it was KD96 or, you know, Y98 or certainly Magic 108. So that's a great reference.
Yeah,
there.
It is. Great Eric Magic time. Michaels. He was so great.
Well, we have a Mizzou game tonight in Columbia. We're going to preview it with my friend Chris Giovino in the next hour. But I saw something when, you know, I'm on all the emails as an alum and someone who's a big supporter of the university. They were really talking up this drone show that's going to take place tonight during the halftime show. I remember that there was something like this, I think, at a Super Bowl a couple years ago. These are starting to be more popular. Sky Elements is the company that's putting it on, and they've done this before across the country at other, you know, football stadiums, etc. And this afternoon, telling us a little bit more about it, Kyle Pivnik, who is with this company, Sky Elements. They're located in Fort Worth. Kyle, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you, Mark.
Well, tell me what's going to go on tonight. I've seen a couple of these, not in person, just on television, as I've indicated, but this sounds like a lot of fun for the fans tonight when the sun goes down.
Oh, yeah. At halftime, we're going to see 300 drones light up the night, all in sync with multiple elements, all on the field, in the sky, and not just with drones. There's going to be some fireworks, some music, and everything else just to make this halftime one to remember. We're super excited to be a part of it and help Mizzou fans celebrate.
So Sky Elements has been around for how long? And you guys have done shows like this across the country, haven't you?
Yeah, we do about 60% of all the drone light shows in the U.S. So as you mentioned, drone light shows are more popular than ever, and that's mostly because of our efforts. We're on America's Got Talent. We've worked directly with the NFL, every single MLB team, and plenty of different NFL teams are all looking to add drone light shows this next season. So Mizzou is ahead of the curve.
So what will fans see tonight, actually, in the sky? Things that are related to the university and the football program or something different? Is there a theme for the actual show?
You know, it's just celebrating the kickoff of this new season and just really helping fans just get that school spirit. So a lot of different dynamic elements, all 400 feet tall, that are just look amazing in person. I know you mentioned you haven't seen a drone light show in person before, and I can't stress enough how much better they look when you're able to see it with your own eyes. Just like fireworks, they don't do it justice when you're recording it on your phone, watching it on the screen. You really have to be there.
Hey, Kyle, this is Fred. How do the drones not run into each other?
Hey, Fred, we have a team of animators and designers who spend hundreds of hours curating their paths so they do not collide. Every drone has no idea that there's one next to it. Just like you on the highway, you're driving down the road and you know where you're going, but you got no idea where the guy next to you is going. Just like those drones. They all go follow their path. They light up their lights right when we tell them to, and they make the amazing shapes that you see in the sky.
What is takeoff like? In other words, you got 300 drones. So how do you got kickoff to the game at 7 o'clock. When you kick off this show, where are they? How do they all take flight?
Yeah, so we are tucked behind the stadium. We're on the south end. We are hiding behind the stadium and just setting everything up as we speak. Takeoff looks nothing short of an alien invasion.
several hundred units just all taken off, and they will sit there and calibrate for about a minute or so and then go into their position. So it is a sight to behold. Now, so, I definitely recommend everybody to see it if they get the chance.
So, Kyle, 300 drones, but you guys did something at Comic-Con with 2,400 drones for Deadpool and Wolverine?
Yeah, that's correct. That was the largest drone light show in the United States. That also included our newest technology, which is pyro drones. The FAA just granted us approval for us to attach pyrotechnics to drones. It took us 3 years to achieve. We're the first drone light show provider to be able to do so, and that was an amazing performance we were able to do.
Now you are speaking my language.
Boy. Anything on fire.
As a home-cooked pyro, I love to hear that.
Hey, if you can't go to the game, how far out can you actually see these drones in the air?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I would say if you can see the stadium, you'll be able to see the drones. That's probably the easiest metric. Typically, you can say that you can see it on a clear night up to 3 miles away, but there's a lot of things that can get in your way, such as trees or buildings. So if you can see the top of the stadium, you'll be able to see the drones.
Awesome. Kyle, thank you so much for helping us out here this afternoon. I wish I was going to be there in person. I tried to get Sue to do the last 2 hours of the show. She refused. And if Mizzou's struggling a little bit at any point, can you fly one of those drones behind the Murray State bench and maybe get some information for us by any chance?
I'll see what I can do. You know, they might kick me out, but I'll see what I can do.
I want to see one of these in person, though. I do want to see one in person. So you guys have fun, and thank you so much for coming on here.
No problem. We're looking forward to coming back. You'll have to catch the next one.
I will. And there'll be more night games, hopefully, this season. That's cool. Let's do this.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Well, we've got music for this first one, Mark. Here we go. On this day in history, 54 years ago, in 1970, this was the number one song.
Yeah. What is it good for?
Absolutely nothing.
Great song, been covered many times by great artists as well. This is Edwin Starr, I believe.
That is correct.
Absolutely nothing. Say it again, y'all. What?
Did you say this was the number one?
Yeah.
Nice. Springsteen does a pretty good cover of this and has over the years.
What is the movie that this reminds me of with Chris What's-His-Name and they did and Jackie Chan and they did multiple movies? Oh, and they played
it. Chris Rock?
No.
Chris Tucker! Yeah. What were those called?
What were those called, Fred? Can you think of it?
I don't know.
Somebody tell me.
I'll look it up. I do remember what you're talking about.
They used it in one of those. There were like three or four of them. And that's what it reminds me of. I can't be the only one, but Rush Hour, thank you.
Oh, that's it.
Thank you.
That should have come to me a lot quicker. That's right. Because they just did the damn Rush Hour 4, didn't they, a couple of years ago?
So.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they were stellar, but
no,
I watched most of them. The first couple, I think, were pretty good.
Yeah, they were entertaining.
And on this day in history, 27 years ago in 1997, Netflix was founded. That's right. Back then, it was just a DVD rental service. I remember informing young Abby that this was the case, and she was like, what?
Oh, really? She was not familiar with that? The way that you said it's nuts because we would you have the plan that would give you like two movies at a time or four movies at a time? You could choose different plans, right?
Yeah, you could do that. Fred, did you see Abby last night?
No, I heard she was at the Fox, but I didn't see her.
Look at that. I had a report that you were there and she was there.
How was Hamilton?
Opening night was great.
Yeah.
It's always classic. It's great.
Oh, that's awesome. But anyway, 27 years ago, Netflix, they did not start streaming until February of 2007.
But give that company a lot of credit for their evolution. Because I think if you go back to 2007 and we were talking about how Netflix was changing, I'm pretty sure that there were people like me on the radio saying, wait a second, what's this going to turn into?
Exactly.
Because that was all so new at the time.
It really was. And then you could stream and get a couple because you didn't trust it. And then eventually you just streamed and thought, what the heck?
I should know this. Is Blockbuster still around?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
Yeah, because I guess they didn't evolve.
No, they didn't.
Well, there There was a good documentary. The last blockbuster or something like that.
I think that might be it.
Yeah.
This is just the part of the show where we bring up movies we don't remember and things we have no memory of whatsoever.
And then thank God I have a iPad in front of me here because let's see if I can confirm that. Yeah, there was a movie in 2020 called The Last Blockbuster.
Okay.
Blockbuster.
At 19, I can't believe it's been 19 years, but 19 years ago today in 2005 was when Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf Coast. It's been 19 years, and that was Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. About 1,800 people passed away, and they had the flooding in New Orleans after the levees broke. And remember, they were putting everybody in the dome down there?
Yeah.
Oh, I had forgotten that, but that was 19 years ago today. Are you looking something up? Because
no.
I need music.
No, I got music for
okay.
you.
Okay. This is kind of amazing. According to Billboard, Post Malone is the first person in music history to have a number one on the top country album chart, number one on the rap album chart, and number one on the top rock and alternative chart ever in music history.
And I got to tell you something. I was a little slow to the game with Post Malone. Didn't quite get it a few years ago. This whole country thing that he's doing right now is really good. And I've liked some of the songs that he's done even the past couple years. But that's quite an accomplishment.
It's huge.
And there's certainly nobody that's had that same record with as many face tattoos. That we know.
Well, they say it's the first person in music history to do that. He had 3 number one rap albums. Stoney, Beer Bongs and Bentleys, and Hollywood's Bleeding. He had a number one rock and alternative album with Austin. And now this, it's F1 Trillion. It puts him in the category of one. That's
it's
pretty impressive.
It's really good record, too. I've listened to it a little bit. Producer Emeritus Dave Klein is the one who kind of turned me on to it. He said, you got to listen to the Post Malone country record, and it's pretty good.
I guess Beyonce hasn't done any rap yet.
Well, and what about, she done rock, you mean, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Or T. Swifty probably
right.
didn't get counted on the rock.
That's
She'd have
right.
to do a rock and roll.
That's right. Let's see. NASCAR has announced it's going to be doing a Cup Series race outside of the U.S. next year. In June of 2025, there will be a race in Mexico City. Now, they'll also run Xfinity that same weekend. Oh, and a NASCAR Mexico Series, which I did not realize was a thing. But it sounds like a good excuse to have Kenny Wallace on.
You know what? I was just going to say, I miss Kenny Wallace, Fred, and we need to get him on. You know, here's the thing, and I think I still need to do this with Kenny. I was thinking about him this week because we're friends, and we hang out every once in a while, but we always do a Cardinals game, and we have not done that, and there's still an opportunity, but the circumstances are a little different than past years, I would say.
They are.
Cardinals, by the way, they won today, so they split the series with San Diego. That was a good victory last night.
Yeah.
Didn't they split it, Fred? You looked like I said something wrong.
I think we won... Was that a 4-game series?
Do we win 3 of 4?
No.
It was a split, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll take it. Yankees are in town.
Guess. Fred looks at me sometimes with these horrifying faces. I'm like, what did I say?
I was doing the math. I counted wrong.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, NASCAR has apparently done exhibition races in Australia and Japan before, but not for points. They did a points race in Canada in the 50s. But the Mexico City Grand Prix was one of the favorites with Formula One fans. So I guess NASCAR thought, what the heck? We'll give it a try, too.
You know, speaking of NASCAR, I think Worldwide Technology Raceway just announced that they're going to have a NASCAR Cup Series playoff race in September 2025.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's
so
huge.
They're putting that on their schedule.
Oh, that's going to be really huge. All right. Okay, listen to this story. The level of anger that these 5 words have stoked is cracking me up. The TSA went viral after tweeting that, quote, peanut butter is a liquid. It's been viewed more than 20 million times in the last few days. The post says, quote, peanut butter is a liquid. We said what we said. How about that? It's slightly aggressive, I think.
Yeah, I would say.
They obviously meant it to irk people, but they really do classify it as a liquid. And if you want to carry peanut butter on a plane, it has to be 3.4 ounces or less. Did you know that? I've not been carrying around peanut butter, so I don't know.
That is so ridiculously dumb. Uh-huh. I can't even believe we do some of these things.
Isn't some of the natural peanut butter like really?
It does get. I buy the natural stuff because I just like a little less sugar. But if you get the, I have to think about here. Like the Smucker's natural, it's all liquidy, and you have to. But right. I've gone to the Jif natural. The Jif natural, you don't have to do that. It's
okay,
a lot
thank you,
easier.
Jif. By the way, they call it a non-Newtonian fluid because the nerds went in to figure out what it was. And if you really want to be technical, toothpaste and mayonnaise are also in that category. So I guess they file it under that. But, okay, the people's reactions have been kind of amusing. One person said, my favorite was one guy who said, oh, no, I can no longer wash down my meal with a nice cold glass of peanut butter.
But that's so dumb. You're like, let's say I like peanut butter. I put it on my banana. You take a half yes. jar of peanut butter on the plane. Like, nope, you can't have that. That's
nope.
a bomb.
That's
that is
right.
a bomb. It's a Jif bomb. That's what it's called.
And there was another somebody who responded by saying, this is why no one likes you.
Yeah, that is exactly why.
I mean, it's the part of the whole thing. Now, this is a weird story that Fred sent me, but I do want to mention it. An American woman was killed and five others had to be rescued after a replica Viking ship capsized off the coast of Norway. Now, this thing was a 30-foot ship. It was operated with sails and oars. I mean, they were trying to be authentic. They sent out a Mayday call on Tuesday about 60 miles off the coastline. And it was a woman in her 20s who passed away. It's part of a group of adventurers trying to recreate a Viking voyage. That is just nuts to me. It did not pan
Oopsie.
Out.
Oopsie. Yeah.
Guess it was tougher than they thought.
Yeah, I guess
so. Oh, my
so.
Gosh. It's horrible. And finally, in Sue's news, we do have today's random fact. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Cashews are the only nut that you can't buy in its shell because the shells are toxic.
The shells are toxic?
Yep. They have something in them.
I didn't even
that
know they
you
had
don't
want
to eat. So if you have, yeah. If you had, you know, how they try to shell things in a factory, but somehow there'll still be shell bits in there, and if somebody ate it.
That makes my head hurt. That doesn't even make sense.
Well,
right?
It does.
But it's, well, I guess.
Cashews.
I love cashews.
You can't
no
buy them in a shell.
Look at that. You like the salted or the unsalted, Sue?
I like the unsalted. That
like
will not
salted.
Surprise
I'm
you.
I'm going to tell you. I like the salted for
I'll
sure.
I'll eat them both.
Hey, here's my segue here for Curtis Hack from Newsbusters. He's gonna drop the truth bomb on you. Coming up. It's
better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Making your afternoon a little hotter. Mark Reardon on 97.1.
We have a second clip that's now been released from the CNN interview, and it is even more embarrassing than the first one for Dana Bash in particular. We'll get to that here in a second. Here's the first one that came out where she basically feeds Kamala the answer.
Speaking, how should voters look at some of the changes that you've made, that you've explained some of here in your policy? Is it because you have more experience now and you've learned more about the information? Is it because you were running for president in a Democratic primary? And should they feel comfortable and confident that what you're saying now is going to be your policy moving forward?
Dana, I think the most important and most significant aspect of my policy perspective and decisions is my values have not changed.
Okay, and then she goes on, blah, 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 blah. She never answers the question. Nope. Curtis Houck is the managing editor of Newsbusters, which is part of the Media Research Center. You have tweeted out both of those clips. We're pulling the other one right now. I guess I was rather shocked that the first clip, I guess they were proud to send that out, even though Dana fed her the answer to the question before she even answered.
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
What in the world is this? And, like, you know, Tim Walz is just sitting there. I think it's Ben Shapiro or somebody else on X Point. It looks, Tim Walz looks like the uninvolved lawyer who, like, set his client up to get, like, stabbed or looked like an idiot, you know?
Somebody said it looked like she was bringing her dad to the McDonald's interview, which that's a timely reference for today in particular.
Well, apparently, too, this is like a Gen Z thing. I know she's not Gen Z, but she claims to be the Gen Z candidate. You know, what is it? Some study about like 20% of Gen Z people like bring their parents to their job interviews now or something.
That.
I don't know.
That's weird, right? I don't get that. Well, let me play the second clip here. We have this loaded in. So here we go.
You had a lot of Republican speakers at the convention. Yeah. Will you appoint a Republican to your cabinet?
Yes, I would.
Anyone
yes,
in mind?
I would. No one in particular in mind. We got 68 days to go with this election, so I'm not putting the cart before the horse.
All right. Wait, first of all, what? That's the question? Will you put a Republican? All
Are
these things that have
me?
Been happening for the last couple of months. And Dana Bash, in an 18-minute interview, Curtis, is that what we're finding out? It was just 18 minutes? That's one of the questions?
Yes. That's what we're hearing. I mean, this is so stupid.
Oh,
this
my
is
gosh.
Wild. This is wild. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, Adam Kinzinger at the VA or something? Like, Liz Cheney is transportation secretary? Like, come on.
I can't even imagine. If that's the best that they're releasing, what the hell is the rest of it going to be like? And will he say anything? Have you heard anything where Tim Walz has weighed in yet or not?
No, I mean, they haven't played a clip yet where he himself has weighed in. So I'm kind of interested to see how this goes, because that was one of our questions going in at Newsbusters was like, how many questions go to Tim Walz? Does Tim Walz try to finish her answers? Because, you know, the analogy that I've been making to a few folks I made on Newsmax earlier today, which is Tim Walz basically there to be like the guardrails
yes,
on the bowling alley so that the bowling pin, i.e. the bowling ball, i.e. Kamala, doesn't fall into the gutter?
I think that's basically
what this is. We're living this feminist moment era that we're constantly being told about. And yet she needs like a man to walk her across the street safely. Like, what are we doing? Like, this is a fundamentally unserious campaign. You heard her clip. I'm sure people have her clip yesterday talking to this high school band about how, like, as a group, you come together and you make something happen. It was something to that effect. It made absolutely no sense. And her rally's going on right now, or just finished, it looks like, in Savannah. I'm staring at it right now on CNN. And she did her whole normal lines about how, like, oh, I'd always say in the courtroom, Kamala Harris for the people. And the crowd just goes, oh, like, this is a fundamentally unserious election that we're dealing with right now. The thing that grinds my gears most right now is, yes, I mean, the Trump supporters are knocked as being cultists by the liberal media and the left, but like, what is this? This is completely devoid of any policy. I mean, Barack Obama was hoping change, and we knew about the Obama zombies at one point, but this election is just showing one entire political party to not care about any sort of policy. And even CBS had stories last week, man on the streets, where Democrats, not just in Chicago but elsewhere, said, yeah, we really don't care what she actually said she would do as president, but it's all about the vibes, man.
Well, and I think the most honest assessment of this, believe it or not, that I've heard this week is from Quentin Tarantino. Did you hear what he said on a podcast earlier this week?
I believe it was something to this effect.
Basically, it's like, we don't care. And I think that's where a lot of Democrats are. And I understand that. I mean, look, if you're the person that doesn't want Trump in the White House, you're going to do everything you can, probably. You're not going to care that she's not doing interviews. You don't care about any of that because it's about winning. I think the Republicans should think about that a little bit more, because the Democrats are focused on winning and they have a big teammate with them, and that's the legacy media. So you're already the underdog in theory because of the media complicity. But I mean, they keep right. This is going to be fascinating to see how the Washington Post, the LA Times, all these traditional outlets respond to Dana Bash's lack of questions.
Yeah, I mean, this just occurred to me. I mean, the other thing that the Democrats really seem to be okay with in liberal media as well is they like being in charge. They like molding their candidate. I mean, Barack Obama and Bill Clinton, we know, and Hillary Clinton, we all know with them, they were the ones driving the bus, okay? Like, what they thought, they thought. Whereas Joe Biden, I think for the last 4 years, they've gotten used to the fact that they get to call the shots, that Joe Biden was an empty, cheap suit in serious mental decline. So really, they got to run the place, run the country, and they kind of liked how this has gone. They think this has been fun for them. So they got rid of Joe Biden, and now they have Kamala Harris. Yes, she has issues talking, but as far as we know, she's not struggling clearly in mental decline, physical decline like Joe Biden. So they don't have that baggage. Now they just get to mold her like they did Joe Biden, and they get to, you know, I guess have the keys to the car. And this is one of the differences, but this is one of the differences though, Mark, too, with Kamala Harris being the top of the ticket, not Joe Biden, that I think the Trump campaign can really drive home, which is a lot of these things like the Green New Deal and defunding the police. Like, yeah, Joe Biden was kind of going along with these things, but he was kind of like, you know, the dad who gives their kid $20 to go into the store and go find something, you know, like, go leave me alone. Whereas Kamala is along for the ride.
Well, it's a vibe election, Curtis. We all know that at this point, and I cannot believe the lengths at which the legacy media are going to cover up all this stuff. Look, I still saw John Berman yesterday on CNN trying to still knock down this notion that she was the border czar. So they don't care what any of the truth is. They want to keep repeating it just like Biden did, or I'm sorry, yeah, just like Biden did last week at the convention when he told the Very Fine People story again. Keep lying about that.
It's just like what you saw with he did that today with Caroline Leavitt, the Trump spokeswoman. He at least two or three times in the interview, he pointed this out. It was all about root causes, Caroline.
Yeah, Berman, you mean. Yes. Right.
Blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, come on, give me a break. And there's a reason why they're just going with this vibes election. You know, we did a poll at Newsbusters of Biden voters, because you can't really pull official Kamala voters because, of course, no one actually voted for Kamala in the primary, so pollsters can't poll for specific Kamala voters. And we found, on specific things like abolishing ICE, you know, key tenet of the border policy, 77% of her own likely voters didn't know that she, at one point in her career, has said she's abolishing ICE. And that goes to Dana Bash's irresponsible question, that she kept it so vague about, well, you've held all kinds of positions. Do you still believe them?
And yeah, what about the follow-ups?
Or because of that?
Yeah, you can ask a question like that if you want to ask a general question, but then when they start to give an answer that doesn't make any sense or they pivot, you say, okay, wait a second here. Here's what you said on the border. There was no aggression. Now, look, I haven't heard the whole thing, so let's see if something else happens. But you'd think if CNN is trying to prove that this is an interview that's on the up and up and a serious interview, the clips that they would release would be showing that, but that's what makes me worried for the rest of it.
Yeah, no, I know. That's why it's concerning. And this is the problem that we often see with CNN. Mark, you know, they might ask, Jake Tapper does this all the time. He'll ask sometimes of a Democrat a decent initial question, but he'll let the Democrat go on for 90 minutes, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, like you would see sometimes on NPR with Barack Obama and Steve Inskeep. And then, oh my gosh, look at the time. When we heard that allegedly this interview ran only 18 minutes, you wonder, like, what was going on here? And that raises a larger question, I think, that listeners need to consider. All of the networks wanted this interview. I mean, I don't think it's that surprising. This was a newsmaking interview, going to be. What did CNN tell them that got the campaign to say yes? Maybe not shared questions in advance like we saw with Donna Brazile, but did they put parameters on this? Did CNN offer them, what do you want? And if they said, we don't want you to ask about blank, did CNN say, sure? We don't know. We don't know how these kind of games that go on back and forth that we, the people, don't hear about, and that they claim to represent us. They do this all the time. With someone who watched the White House press briefing, I hear this all the time. Well, we represent the American people. The American people would like to know this. No, you would like to know this.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they're so full of it. But thankfully, we have Newsbusters and other organizations out there trying to set the set the truth straight. Curtis, thank you so much. I can't wait for the rest of the interview, right?
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Mark, as always. Buckle up, folks.
Absolutely. Curtis Hack from Newsbusters. We'll talk soon. I believe my friend Tom is correct. I kind of said this yesterday, that the fans, they're voting right now, and they're voting for change. And that's why many of them are not showing up at Busch Stadium. However, The Cardinals take 2 of 4 from the Padres. They had a thrilling finish last night with a walk-off from Arenado, and they won 4-1 this afternoon. We heard this on Fox a couple of days ago. This is a farmer from Peoria, Illinois, Ron Wigan, talking about some of the challenges that farmers have out there in this economy.
I mean, the input prices have went probably 30% up, and the commodities went 30% down. And you got 60% in there that you need to try overcoming. That's a very large hill to climb. I mean, we have interest rates that are going up. A lot of farmers are borrowing money. Just to put in a crop, 1,300 acres, you have to borrow around $1 million just to get it in and harvested and done. So you have to have understanding bankers or a large bank account. But it's just inflation on interest rates, fuel, fertilizer. Everything. It's just going up and the commodities are going down.
Yeah, they're getting hammered. And then we feel it sometimes, certainly at the grocery store. Blake Hurst is back with us. He used to be the president of the Missouri Farm Bureau. He's a farmer and greenhouse owner in Tarkio, Missouri. Blake, welcome back. How are you? I'm sure that what you just heard there in that soundbite from Ron Wigan in Peoria is very relatable, unfortunately.
Yeah, sounds very familiar. I've had we've got a good crop in the fields all across the Corn Belt. And that's resulted in lower prices. And, of course, our input prices have been on an upward trend for now almost 4 years. And it's making quite a squeeze on farmers.
Explain what that, you know, when he says at the beginning of the sound about the input prices, explain that a little bit, what you're talking about there.
Well, our main costs or our largest costs are fuel, fertilizer, and seed, and then crop protection chemicals. And all of them are seeing increases, particularly seed. And we've also seen a pretty big increase in the price of machinery, partly because of the general inflationary trends in the economy and partly because of tariffs, which have raised the cost of steel and other things that go into making the tractors and combines that we use in our farm. So, again, we're seeing quite a squeeze.
Yeah, and when it comes to equipment, I mean, I'm guessing that, I don't know what the average combine costs these days. What is it, about $500,000? I don't even know.
Yeah, it's very easy to spend $500,000.
Right, but I mean, also, you're not necessarily spending that and buying cash, right? So if you have to finance something, then you have interest rates that are really crushing you there.
Yeah, sure. We've seen the interest rates get up. You know, farmers, most, I guess, on operating capital paying 8%, 9%. Certainly seeing increases in mortgage rates for farm ground. So it makes a difference. You know, farmers have had a pretty good stretch of years, late teens, early 20s. We saw some pretty strong crop prices. And one of the things that we're seeing now is that because of those good years, farmers have purchased machinery and they've got their machinery fleet in good shape. And John Deere, other equipment suppliers have raised prices right along with the grain prices, but they did not decrease them when grain prices dropped 30%. So they're seeing a real drop in their demand. So we're going to see this spread through the economy as the people that supply farmers are going to start to suffer as well.
Well, and, you know, we do feel it. Like, we were looking at some numbers yesterday just with inflation. Like, the price of eggs in particular has really, really gone up. We know the price of meat has gone up. And that all these things that you're mentioning are factors in that, right, Blake?
Well, yeah, we've seen obviously input costs are pushing that in the case of eggs. You've got some animal welfare legislation on both coasts in Massachusetts and California that has pushed up the price of eggs. We've seen some disease problems in the chicken herd or the chicken flock, I guess you'd say, that's caused that. And in cattle, the high price, you know, we've had good prices for corn, soybeans. That's increased the cost of feeding the cattle. And then we've seen a lot of cattle go to town because of widespread drought. And when that happens, it reduces the price the year that the cow goes to town. But the next year, she didn't have a calf.
You get a real big increase in
meat costs. And that's what people are seeing at the grocery counter.
Yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense. I wasn't even thinking about the calf factor there because that does play in. You mentioned seeds being expensive. That would have been something just as a non-farmer that I would have expected would be a really big cost, but it is?
Oh, yeah, it's probably the biggest cost per acre that we have is seed, particularly for corn.
Now, why is that? Is that because the corn has been, the seeds have been engineered in a way that makes it more conducive to bigger crops? So you're buying quality?
There's two reasons. Obviously, the quality is better, and then you're seeing a lot of consolidation in the seed industry. So the combination of not many competitors and seed that, again, as you say, has been bred to yield, be more drought tolerant and have some resistance to common insects and that sort of thing, and it all costs more. So,
yeah.
So that's where we're seeing some real price increases.
On the bumper crop of corn in particular, I'm guessing maybe beans as well. Is that because we have not had, we had a lot of rain this summer, but not flooding that washed out a lot of those crops? Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's been, up in northwest Missouri where I farm, we had a wet spring, a little difficulty getting all the crop in, but then a beautiful May, June pollination period was just perfect. Then a dry last half of July, first half of August, we stressed the corn some. But we're going to have a good crop.
Awesome.
We got a big chance of rain tonight, and that should guarantee a pretty above average bean crop as well. So that's the one. The bad news is that makes the price go down. The good news is at least you got a few more bushels.
That's right. Blake, thank you for the update. We love the farmers. We're hoping and praying for you to have continued success. I know it's tough out there, and I appreciate coming on here.
All right, so get those Cardinals turned around. Let's go.
That is above my pay grade, but yes, I appreciate the effort there. Well, that's fascinating. And, Sue, I've talked about this before. Like I like to say, I think I tweeted this out today that they have these plans for Chesterfield Mall. They're tearing it down. They're going to put like a downtown Chesterfield thing. And I tweeted out that was really the only real job that I ever had. I worked at Camelot Music in Chesterfield Mall in the summer of 1984. But I also often say that really my only real job outside of that was I worked on a farm for 2 years when I was 12 and 13 years old back in the 1970s in an area that is outside of Aurora, Illinois, Big Rock. And I had my mom's aunt and uncle, they weren't into a lot of, they had done some pig farming, I think, but they didn't really have livestock at that time. It was mainly bean and corns. And I would walk the soybean fields. And a lot of people don't even know what that is now, but you take a hoe, you grab four lanes of a soybean field, you walk down, you pull as many weeds out as you possibly can.
Wow.
Now, Monsanto fixed a lot of that, right? Because now you have chemicals that don't allow those weeds to grow. I've been told, though, by farmers that the weeds sort of outsmart the chemicals. And if you just drive by a bean field, you'll see things that are sprouting out there. But I have a lot of empathy for the work that farmers have done and the difficulties that they have. I don't think we talk enough. The BBC,
agreed.
I mentioned this week, the BBC is going to come here and interview Jane and I about Midwestern politics in a couple of weeks. I think it's going to be next weekend. And there doesn't seem to be an appreciation. Fox did that story on farmers, but maybe this is unfair because I don't always watch MSNBC and CNN, but do they even have a recognition of how people in rural areas live their lives and how difficult it is for family farms in particular?
I
they don't have any connection to that at all. They don't make any effort.
I don't think so. And these are the people, the working people, the important people of this nation who actually feed us and have real jobs.
Yeah. About 5 or 6 years ago when I was on KMOX, I had thought to myself, even during those years I worked on the farm in 78, 79 or 77 and 78, I had never actually been part of any of the harvesting because this was always over the summer. So I'd never been in a combine when it's harvesting. And I went up to Illinois and darn it, I can't even remember the company up there, the farms, but went on a international harvester. You got Team Green with John Deere. You got the other team there.
Yeah.
And they were Team IH. And, you basically press a few buttons and the damn things do everything for you, especially on the beans. They have the ability to do really anything with GPS. So the technology is just
crazy,
amazing.
Which also means expensive.
I was up there. I was up there on that tractor and I was steering the tractor. I don't believe that they trusted me to do that, but it was a really cool experience. Andrew Bailey is coming up here after the top of the hour. He is the Attorney General of Missouri. He won his primary race a few weeks back, so he's likely to be the Attorney General next year as well. He still has the general election, but he's going to be tailgating in Columbia, but we'll also talk about some of the things related to his office, including the Supreme Court upholding his court order blocking the Biden-Harris student loan forgiveness plan. There's also some local cases like Marcellus Williams. We'll get into that with Andrew Bailey. And then piggybacking off of that, because Andrew's a big Mizzou fan, he's going to the game tonight, my friend and J-School classmate Chris Trevino, Mizzou broadcaster, he'll give us a preview with the game against Murray State tonight at 5:25, plus an audio cut of the day. Let's go.
Get more at 971talk.com. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.